is Munoz versus Barnard, Mr. Mulvaney.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Patrick Mulvaney. I represent Wilima Munoz concerning her claim for Social Security disability benefits. She was 51 years old at the time of the ALJ hearing, not 41 as the judge found. She's not able to work because she has a severely deformed spine deformed by scoliosis to the extent that her left leg is shorter than her right leg. She has pain in her neck between her shoulder blades, down in the low back between her hips, and the pain goes down both legs. Her scoliosis is so severe that...
What is your best evidence of recent deterioration of her condition?
The
ALJ found that even with all the things you've described, she was not only able to work, but did work for a very long time.
Your Honor,
she found that she could still do her last gainful employment.
She, over the past 15 years, before she stopped working, she'd had 15 jobs, and
I understand that.
She kept going back to work, but she would miss days from work.
The question I'm asking is, what is your best evidence of deterioration in her condition?
Your Honor, the ALJ ignored the September 8, 99 hospital spine scoliosis x-ray report showing that she was impaired by a 45-degree right convex scoliosis of her lower thoracic spine.
You're not engaging my question.
That's the best evidence. It shows us the worst of her spine. That's the worst measurement.
Does that
of her spine.
Show deterioration of her condition?
Her condition has been severely disabling for many, many years. It's not the sort of thing like cancer that grows worse and worse as you go on. It's always been bad. She's always had a scoliosis of her spine.
And how was she able to work?
How was she able to work?
The fact that she did work for 15 years with this condition would certainly be, one would think, substantial evidence for the finding that she can work with this condition.
But she was not able to work successfully, Your Honor. She went through 15 jobs, losing each one due to her deformed spine. She walks with a limp because her left leg is shorter than her right. She uses a cane. The vocational expert testifying at the hearing said that if she missed as many days as she said, one day a week, she couldn't sustain any jobs. If her lifting was limited to less than 10 pounds and walking limited to less than half a block, standing limited to about 10 minutes, and her sitting was limited to about 30 minutes, she could not sustain any competitive employment. The ALJ ignored each and every bit of evidence and every finding which supported a finding of disability. And this seems to be common practice with Social Security, that though you go into the case with evidence to support a finding that the claimant's totally disabled, Social Security simply refuses to look at the evidence that you offer. They refuse to acknowledge it. They don't reject it, they just don't note it in the record. They pretend as though it's not even there. Thus, the ALJ ignored the September 86 spine x-ray, although this proved that she had sclerosis of the spine. And for the next 13
sclerosis?
Softening
scoliosis
of the vertebral area there, Judge, and I believe that. But this judge chose to go forward without a medical advisor to explain these various things, and we're left to their own layman's understanding. The ALJ ignored the 1988 hospital inpatient treatment for a cervical spine injury, although this proved that she had radicular pain in her right arm and her neck. Ignored the 93 left ankle fracture and x-rays, although this combined with her obesity would be quite disabling.
Why does the fact that she fractured her ankle in 1993 make her disabled in 2000?
It shows a longitudinal history of orthopedic problems, Your Honor, which combined with her obesity would...
Fractures heal, right? You're saying we should reverse the decision in this case, because a bone fracture from 7 years earlier was not discussed.
Your Honor.
And I have a great deal of difficulty seeing why the administrative law judge has to discuss healed fractures.
This court has ruled that the ALJ is required to discuss all evidence that is relevant and probative of disability. This ALJ has not done so.
Well, what was the most significant oversight on his part?
Well, 13 years of medical care, which showed continuing problems with her spine, and the 1999 hospital spine scoliosis X-ray report showing that it was now at a 45-degree scoliosis. This court, case after case, has ruled that ALJs are required to consider all the evidence, and if they chose some of the, if they find some of the evidence is not probative, to say so. They cannot simply ignore it and argue that they have substantial evidence to support a denial decision when they have not considered all the evidence, when they have not considered the evidence that supports a finding of disability. This court has ruled that ALJs are required to build an accurate bridge between all of the evidence and their denial decision. In this case, the judge did not do so, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mulvaney. Mr. Skidmore?
May it please the court. First of all, the date of birth, page 61 of the transcript, the claimant's date of birth is February 9, 1959, so she was 41 years old on the date of the decision. I don't think that's really relevant to this case in particular, but that was her date of birth. She was only 41. Counsel is suggesting that the ALJ didn't err because he didn't consider the medical evidence from 1986 to 1996. As Judge Easterbrook has suggested, however, this evidence was so remote from the relevant time period that the ALJ wasn't required to consider it. The alleged onset date is January of 1999, and the ALJ discussed the evidence from 1999 and after. He didn't discuss the 1986 lumbar x-rays showing minimal degenerative changes. He didn't discuss the 1993 ankle x-rays showing some...
There's a strange air of unreality about this case. The ALJ actually found that she's capable of doing light work?
Correct.
Not even sedentary, but light? I mean, light is actually pretty heavy. We all do just sedentary work, right?
Correct.
And if she could actually go back and be a security guard, that strikes me as bizarre.
Well...
Because this person, she's extremely obese, and she has severe spinal problems, and she walks in a very uncertain fashion. And how could she possibly do light work?
Well, the step four finding included two jobs. One was the security guard job, and one was the limo dispatcher job. The vocational expert testified that the dispatcher job was a sedentary job. So even if she is...
Well, now, wait a second. The ALJ found that she can do light work.
Correct.
Such as the work of a security guard.
Correct.
Or assembling stuff in a factory, right? That's light work, too.
Correct.
So I don't get that. I mean, how can one take seriously a decision that comes to such a conclusion?
Well, she performed a series of... She had scoliosis that was dating back to the early 90s. She performed a series of light and medium and sedentary jobs.
But we have cases which have said, sensibly enough, that the fact that a person works is not of itself proof that the person is a paradoxical asthmatic, is able to do the work, because some people will make a heroic effort to do work that they're not really physically capable of doing. And if it's true she's had 15 jobs in 15 years and can't keep any of them because you can't actually work 5 days a week, then the fact that she has worked would not be compelling evidence that she was not disabled.
It's not conclusive evidence, but it's some evidence. And when you look at her treatment...
Well, it's not some evidence the way I describe it, is it?
Well, Well, I think the fact that she had scoliosis and she had these other orthopedic complaints and she continued to work, one of her jobs...
Why did she continue to work? Suppose she worked 15 times. She had 15 jobs in 15 years. Maybe this isn't accurate, but suppose she has 15 jobs in 15 years and she loses every single job because she can't work 5 days a week.
Well, first
then
of all,
it wouldn't be any evidence at all that she would. Quite the contrary, it would be evidence.
I agree with your hypothetical, but that's not this case. This case, for example, the dispatcher job she had for 3 years, I think it was from 88 to 91, that's one of the past relevant jobs that he found that she had. As you described it, no, perhaps she couldn't. If you look at her treatment history, even during the relevant time period, she alleged disability in January 99. She reported to the emergency room. She saw an orthopedic specialist the next day. She had scoliosis. There's no question that she had limitations, that she didn't have any neurological deficits, she didn't have any muscle strength deficits, no reflex deficits. The doctor didn't assess any limitations.
All these emphasis on negative strikes me as very odd. There are probably 1,000 disabling conditions that a person could have. The fact that he or she doesn't have 997 of them doesn't say anything.
Well, it's, you know,
why didn't the ALJ discuss her obesity?
Well, there's no indication that her obesity caused any additional limitations.
I don't understand. I mean, it doesn't sound like common sense. This is pretty extreme obesity. 5'3" woman who weighs more than 200 pounds. Now, everyone knows, I think it's common sense, that obesity aggravates skeletal problems, right?
Correct, and the regulations still recognize.
So why doesn't it have to be something that... such a salient a feature of her situation that you'd think, since these aren't supposed to be adversary proceedings,
well,
the ALJ would have commented on it.
Well, he didn't make specific comments about it. He didn't do a detailed analysis of it, but if you look
at... Well, he didn't mention it, did he?
I don't believe he did.
Well, that's not a detailed analysis. That's just ignoring a salient feature.
If you look at his RFC assessment, though, it was for range of light work with alternate sitting and standing, occasional bending and squatting, no kneeling, crawling, or rope climbing. He accommodated her leg length asymmetry, no walking on uneven surfaces, no work at unprotected heights, no driving, no temperature extremes. So to the extent, you're suggesting that he ignored the obesity, but there's still... Ms. Munoz still hasn't presented evidence that her obesity caused limitations that were greater than those in the RFC.
Well, what is the procedure under this, scheme that case employs for weighing a person's limitation as a whole rather than just going down one by one?
What is the scheme? I mean, the ALJ
analytically. What?
The ALJ is required to consider her impairments in combination.
Well, he didn't do that, did he? Because he didn't mention the obesity.
Well, the obesity was considered. First of all, no doctor suggested that her obesity was a limiting impairment. I mean, she had.
What I'm asking about is how we or the ALJ is supposed to weigh multiple impairments, no one of which is disabling, but together maybe they're disabling. So what is the ALJ supposed to do?
Well, he's supposed to consider all of the relevant
evidence. Well, but obesity is relevant, so why didn't he mention that?
Well, he considered Dr. Dryhorst's reports from January of 1999. He explicitly discussed them in his decision. They listed her height and weight in that decision. He discussed the consultative examiner's
evaluation. What do you mean they listed her height and weight? Do the medical reports discuss the bearing of her obesity on her ability to move around?
They do not, and I think we can draw a negative inference from that they weren't causing any additional limitations that were not already caused by the scoliosis in her back. I think we don't have doctors saying that her obesity was causing all of these additional limitations. We have doctors saying she has limitations.
So you said a few minutes ago that of course her obesity would aggravate her skeletal problem.
Well, I will correct. It's not. Well, I'm not sure if I said that. I didn't mean to say that. It's possible that it could cause additional limitations. In this case, there's no evidence that it did cause additional limitations that weren't already caused by her scoliosis.
In other words, if she weighed 100 pounds instead of 200 pounds, she'd be walking the same way.
That may or may not be true.
Okay. That's what you think.
So, I mean, you know, the standard of review is, did the ALJ consider the important evidence? Did he provide a rational basis for his decision? I would submit that he did. He considered that the January 1999 treatment that was coextensive with her alleged onset date. He considered the June 1999 consultative exam by Dr. Ablock. He considered the state agency medical consultant evaluations who rendered gave functional capacity assessments. He considered the September 99 consultative evaluation. The fact is, there just wasn't a significant amount of treatment. She presented for the treatment in January 1999. She presented for treatment again in July of 1999, and there's really no additional treatment after that before the ALJ issued his decision in April 2000. Yes, part of what he relied on was he drew negative inferences from the evidence. There wasn't a lot of objective evidence, and the objective evidence that was there suggested that she did not have significantly disabling limitations. And even if she did have additional limitations, even if she was limited to sedentary work, in his second hypothetical question, the ALJ specifically asked the vocational expert, what if she is limited to sedentary work with all of these other non-exertional limitations? And the vocational expert identified approximately 17,000 jobs.
The finding that she's capable of light work, the significance of that for me is that it seems to me that it undermines the rationality of the ALJ's analysis.
Well, sedentary work.
He seems to think she could, you know, be assembling TVs in a factory.
Well,
seems ridiculous.
I see that my time has expired, if Your Honor said.
Well, if you want to say another thing.
Well, I would just say that, you know, sedentary work is a subset of light work.
Light work is a category above sedentary work. It requires more movement and strength.
Well, my point, I was going to the additional vocational expert testimony in the second hypothetical question. That second hypothetical question limited the hypothetical individual to sedentary work. So even if it's true that she can't perform the light work, we still have evidence that would support a finding that she's not disabled.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Mr. Mulvaney, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
A couple points, Your Honor. Social Security ruling 00-3P requires the ALJ to consider obesity both as totally disabling in itself and to the extent to which it would increase the disabling effect of existing impairments. So the ALJ never mentioned this ruling, the agency's own law. The counsel points the court's attention to Dr. Dryhorse's January 99 evaluation, but the ALJ ignored the findings that she has a definite right rear bump with forward bending every time she bends over, and that her range of motion was very limited. The ALJ ignored all the evidence that she had numbness and tingling in her legs, showing radicular pain going down from her spine, even though those facts are required proof to show that her impairment met listing 105C. The ALJ would note, such as Dr. Ablog's evaluation, parts of it, but then ignored that her obesity was 211 pounds, that her leg lengths were asymmetrical, and that she limped, favoring her left leg. If you could imagine a person twisted to the right, the spine is bent and twisted, the left leg is shorter than the other, she's on a cane to prop herself up to keep from falling, how that person could ever get hired to do anything.
Is that the 45 degree that...
Yes.
That's the deviation of the spine from the vertical?
From vertical, yes, and it's twisted, also twisted. All this puts unequal pressure on her back muscles and causes them to go into spasm, which also is a necessary finding.
But how do you overcome Dr. Fife's report? Isn't that very damaging to your client?
Dr. Fife?
Yeah.
What's the date on that?
Well, I don't know.
I don't recall that.
Dr. Rose Fife, didn't she...
Well, I think, Your Honor, if you look at all 13 years of medical evidence, it's consistent. There may be an agency examiner that finds that she's able to work, but consistently her spine has always been found to be twisted, that she has a chronic and marked back pain from her twisted spine, and sufficient to greatly limit her ability to walk and stand and lift and bend. She cannot... The only way she can bend over is to sit on a chair and then force herself down to the floor and pick up something and then use the chair to stand back up again. She's not, and when a person can't bend any better than that, there's no jobs they can perform. The vocational expert, considering the facts proven, testified there was no job she could perform.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mulvaney. Well, I guess you're... I guess you don't want to sit down, right? Because you have another case. Same case.
Thank you.